Ashbrook Soundwaves is a product of the Gaston County Schools Delta Fellows Program. All events described and opinions expressed in this podcast are based on our recollections and those of our guests, none of which are representative of Ashbrook High School or Gaston County Schools. All music used in this podcast is performed by Ashbrook's very own Caleb Davis and is used with his permission. Ashbrook High School is located in Gastonia, North Carolina.
Yeah, and then I'll count to 5, 6, 7, 8.
Let's see. 3 squared.
He's a math teacher. So he's trying to figure this stuff out.
Ah.
Okay. All right. I'm Andrew Collins.
And I'm Tripp Griffin.
And we are very excited today to have as our guest on Ashbrook Soundwaves, Patrick McHenry, who is congressman from District 10. Is that correct?
That's right.
Okay.
That's right.
Well, we are excited to have you on. I'm going to let you kind of introduce yourself. Tell us a little bit about yourself, and then we're going to pepper you with questions.
Fantastic. Well, thanks for having me on. So I'm a graduate of Ashbrook High, 1994, class of 94. And I grew up in Gastonia. I'm the youngest of five kids, grew up working in the family business, and went to St. Michael's, Greer, and Ashbrook. And then went to NC State and finished my college at Belmont Abbey. And so, I'm born and bred in Gaston County and grateful for my experience at Ashbrook.
Very good. Ashbrook boy, done good.
Yeah. And so now you thought you got connected when you got elected, but actually the real connection you have, my wife graduated class of 95, and she grew up on Buckingham Court right across the street from your grandparents' house. So that's how you got in here. Just so you know, that's your connection that got you on the air.
Okay, so what's your wife's maiden name?
Hatcher, Heather Hatcher. She, her parents, Jane and Lee, it's on Buckingham. You were next door to Tommy and Joyce Weldon, maybe? Or your grandparents were?
And, yes.
Yep. And she was right across the street.
What a small world. What a small world. That is wild. Okay, fantastic. Well, Tripp, thank you for making that connection.
What year did you graduate, Tripp?
Class of 90.
Class
and then
of 90.
Went to NC State myself. Four glorious years.
Nice.
Oh, very excellent. Cool.
All right, so we want to ask you a little bit about your time here at Ashbrook. You've already answered. We had down here to what year did you graduate? We were trying to guess it, and we did not go back through the yearbooks to see, but 94.
Well, look, given the fact that I got white hair, and I've had white hair since, I mean, I got my first gray hairs when I was in Ashbrook. And I thought, well, I'm going to, what's that?
Chorus is what did it to you, right?
Oh yeah, exactly. Tripp McGill. But now I thought I was going to hold on to my hair. In the last couple of years, you know, I started getting sunburned when you go outside, and all of a sudden I was grateful to hold on to my hair for as long as I did. And it's not going to last long. It's not going to last long.
Enjoy it while you've got it, right?
Yeah. But you save on shampoo. Just trust me on that.
So you mentioned Tripp McGill, and I know that if you know Tripp, you were involved with student government and chorus or whatever. So I know that you were here, I think it's been 2 years ago, 3 years ago, and he was awarded with the Order of the Longleaf Pine. I know he's one of your favorite teachers, but that's one of the questions we had for you. Who are some of the teachers that, you know, made an impact on you during your time here at Ashbrook?
Well, this is my rating of them, not their rating of me, right? That's a complicating factor.
That's a longer episode.
Right. That is, you know, because Tripp McGill gets, as chorus teacher, he gets this statewide and national renown for being an expert at teaching vocal and music and the sort of love of music. And he gets this, you know, great marks for performance, right? And for me, I was the one that was, when he would point at me, he would say, he'd give me one of these, like, less of you, right? Right? Yes, right? So meaning I don't need to hear your voice as much. So I don't know so much if I sang chorus or I lip sync chorus.
Were you like Barney Fife on that episode where they said, no, sing softer, the mic will pick you up.
Yes, exactly. Exactly what it was. Yes, that was it. So when I think of Tripp McGill, I think of him as a mentor. I think of him as somebody who was constructive in my life as a teacher, that helped me through, you know, challenging times. And so that's a different mentality than I think, you know, how I think as teachers, you kind of rate yourself and your capacity. Sometimes it's just, you know, knowing that I could go talk to them and you know, that's massively helpful and powerful. So I also had a English teacher named Mrs. Stell, and it wasn't because I was a great performer in her class, but just her style and technique, the way she brought me into appreciating language. Ms. McGinnis, who was very involved in everything. I was involved in student government and was class president as well. So, I mean, all those wraparound things that you do in high school, it all kind of, you know, helped me get through that process. Running cross country, and John Hunsucker was the cross country coach when I was there. And what John Hunsucker did, which Coach Hunsucker did to help a whole group of us, you know, and get some elite athletes out of it and help them train. But for most of us, it was about being constructive in our lives, not because it was some elite athlete. That for sure wasn't the case, but it was a participation in, and I gained a lot of experience, a lot of appreciation for music, but also for physical education and out of history. And I had so many great teachers that just helped me, encouraged me, and gave me a little interest in political science and history, and a lot of the stuff that I've tried to educate myself on in my whole life, for the rest of my life, actually.
Excellent. Those are all very familiar names, and that's from, yeah. It's been a while. It's definitely been a while.
Yeah, Hunsucker. Now, did you have him at Greer as well as at Ashbrook, or just here at Ashbrook?
I did.
Yeah.
Now, he passed away.
Yep. It's been a couple of years ago.
Yeah. A couple of years ago. A couple of years ago. But you know, you think about the impact you get to have, and I, you know, so much the impact you get to have in life, or in helping other people, mm-hmm. as a friend, as a mentor, as somebody who encouraged, an encourager, and you don't quite know the impact you have. But it's been in the last couple of years that I've recognized what some of these teachers that I don't know that I gave my proper level of appreciation at the time. In fact, I for sure didn't. Right.
Right.
You know, but looking back, and I think, well, that was a moment where, you know, I needed somebody to say that to me.
Yes.
I needed that, and I'm so much better for it. And that put me back on the right track.
And that's something that you know, Ashbrook, throughout its throughout the time here at Ashbrook, you know, students benefit from that type of mentorship and that type of guidance from the teachers. And, you know, regardless of the student population, it changes over time. And the teachers here are amazing with the students to this day. And I know that they are more than just teachers to the students here. And like you said, the students may not realize it right now. It may actually even annoy them right now, but it's something that later in life they're going to look back and realize the impact that some of these people had, you know, had on their lives. So, I appreciate you dropping those names for us, and I know they'll appreciate hearing that from you. When you were at Ashbrook, everybody is familiar with the Breakfast Club. So, out of these choices, which would you consider yourself, the athlete, the princess,
no,
the basket case, the brain, or the criminal?
You're probably more of a basket case than anything else, if I'm being honest. If I'm being honest about it.
The basket case
if
was
I'm
the
being
girl.
Honest about it.
That was Ally Sheedy,
Ally
right?
Sheedy, yep.
She was the one eating the
that was Ally Sheedy.
Yeah, Captain Crunch sandwiches.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
That was great. So,
I try to be friends with everyone, and was friends with everyone. But I was probably more of a basket case, if I'm being honest about what was going on in my head.
And as a politician, now as an adult, you still have to try to be friends with everyone, right?
Yeah, and I'm probably still more of a basket.
I was going to say that the looks of Congress today. Yeah, you probably.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. That's probably right.
All right. Well, if you had one, I guess just the fondest memory that you have of your time at Ashbrook, just one thing that really stands out when you are thinking about your time at Ashbrook as a student.
Oh my gosh. We put together some things. You know, there was a talent show that we put on, and you know, this was one where, you know, we hadn't done this. It hadn't been done for the few years around when we did it. And I think McGill is the one who took that on and made it happen. But that was just a night that kind of blew me away. That you've got all these people you go to school with, and you don't quite know that they're a talented pianist, or that they could sing as well. Like that they could be really funny while singing and playing music. So that's something I just remember a lot about. So that's what I think of. That's just one of the things I think of. Then I think of these memories of people I don't get to see as often that were my closest buddies at the time, and hanging out with them. So those are the things I think about.
Do you still get to stay in touch with some of the people you went to high school with? As much as
I do.
Yeah.
I've got best buddy of mine since kindergarten, who's a Charlotte-Mecklenburg police officer, and he and I stay in touch. And then on occasion we see these three other guys that we hung out with all the time, just, you know, all the time. And so, yeah, we still keep in touch. And then I always love running into people because it's like, you know, it's fun to reconnect.
Right. And you have those conversations that you always made fun of your parents for, like, oh man, we got new drywall put in. Really? That's what you're going to talk about? Hey, listen, this is good drywall.
Yes.
So, one more Gastonia question. When you're in town, I know Gastonia is no longer in your congressional district. I know they redrew the
line. Just changed a couple months ago.
It's changed. So when you're in town.
Now that we recognize Charlotte as the gateway to Gastonia, when you're in town.
Yes.
No doubt.
I love that. That was fantastic.
You know, we need.
My sister sent me that clip from Saturday Night Live.
We need to print bumper stickers. For that.
Yes.
Can do.
I doubt that'll catch on in Charlotte, though. And that's the 12th district. That could be their motto.
Really? We should approach their government.
I like it. I'll go pitch that. I'll pitch that to Alma Adams.
Ask their representative.
Ask around.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, so when you're in town, you don't have to worry about hurting anybody's feelings. What is your favorite place to eat? Where do you enjoy stopping when you're in town?
So Black's Barbecue is like the go-to for me. You know, it's Oro's or Black's. I prefer Black's Barbecue over Oro's. So that's sort of a always go-to. And then since COVID, it's just complicated actually, yes. You know, to sit down. But there are plenty of Mexican places that I love going to. All that sort of shifted and changed. But Oro's is, Oro's is what people tout about Gastonia, but Black's is where I like going.
Now, my two favorites, and I'm saying my favorites so I can hear if you have eaten there or not. Have you tried the Pita Wheel yet since they've opened up downtown Gastonia?
Not yet. I follow them on Instagram. It looks really good, and that's really cool what they've done with the gas station.
Yeah, it is a really great place. And great food. And
I will add that to my list.
Yeah, do. And Ray's Smokehouse is my all-time favorite.
Oh, of course. Of course I've been to Ray's.
Yeah.
Yes, both. Well, I hope to go to the Pita Wheel soon. And then the Ray's Smokehouse, of course, I've been there quite a bit. But, you know, Tony's is something I always talk about. Tony's ice cream, something I always talk about. And they had their 100th, and you know, they're like, they've been around for over 100 years.
Yes.
It's a pretty cool thing. I gave a speech on the House floor about Tony's.
did they name it the official ice cream?
No, but I, you know, I'll pitch for it. I'll go kind of see if I can make that happen, right?
Well, they did in the state of North Carolina in the General Assembly, because there's a podcast I listened to called Away Message, and they talked about John Torbett gave a speech on the assembly floor about Tony's, and they I think it was Tony's, and they recognized it as the official ice cream or something, or official, some kind of official flavor. I don't remember.
It's because they have grape. Not everybody has grape ice cream. You can't find that everywhere.
No, you sure can't.
That's hard to do. Mm-hmm. It's hard to do.
It's hard to make. So, have you been downtown since they've started the Fuse District stuff, seeing the new baseball stadium, that kind of thing?
Yep. It's coming along, which is nice.
It's impressive.
Look, I grew up on York Street, and so to see that side of town get this kind of attention is awesome. And that is going to be just a great addition to make all that, to make, you know, downtown what it should be.
Yeah, I hope everybody gets behind it and that it's a success, because I really do think it could be huge for Gastonia.
Now you said you grew up.
Yeah, and the new Warlick Y is one of the nicest YMCAs I've visited in all of my travels. It is incredibly well done. Being on the lake is just amazing, and to see what they've done to preserve the lake, and to make sure people can see it. I mean, it's a really cool thing.
Did you used to jump off the tower at Robin Wood Lake?
I did it once.
That's about all it takes. Yep.
That's all it takes, right?
Yeah, I don't think there'd be that probably is not even legal now to have a tower in the middle of a lake like that.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Yeah. It's amazing we all survived. The Twitter account, Super 70 Sports, right? And they have the picture of like the monkey bars and the slide from when we were kids.
Right.
Right. Which is insanely unsafe. Right. Right.
So, right. And the metal slide out in the sunshine where you could actually smell kids cooking as they slid down. That was, yeah.
and
you were next. Like, I'm next.
And hot as blazes.
Yes. Yes.
Yes. I'm next. And you're like, your legs are on fire.
Okay, let me, we had our, Mr. Beverly, Mr. Gabe Beverly teaches AP Civics here at Ashbrook now, and he is, we had him ask his students, any of them that wanted to give you a question, they, you know, of course, civics, they're learning about how government works, and we had several students come up with questions for you that I'd like to give you. Mm-hmm. I guess this is sort of a town hall type setting. We're just going to ask you the questions, and then let you respond. And really, I was impressed with the questions themselves, because it seems like these students have been paying attention to things. They've been learning some things from Mr. Beverly, but with these questions, they've been paying attention to what's been going on over the last year. I guess if there is a benefit to being in semi-quarantine type state for so long, that they had to watch some news. The first question is, due to North Carolina historically being a swing state and you being a Republican representative, how do you balance the Republican agenda with the needs of citizens in the 10th district, even those who are not Republican?
Well, first, I mean, you get elected from the people, and it's, even if you're very popular, you still have a large number of people vote against you. And so, you know, my boss is not a party. I answer the people of the 10th district who elected me to Congress. I mean, if you live in the 10th district, you're my boss. Is whether or not you voted for me or not is not relevant. But I was elected to represent the 10th district and that piece of North Carolina. And so I try my best to be their voice in Washington, to be clear about what I stand for. And in being clear about what I stand for, then they know how I'll operate for my 2-year term. And I try to be consistent about it. I try to be straightforward about my views. And if they vote for me, I take that as largely an endorsement of those views. It's not perfectly the way it works, because there's not a perfect way of feedback here. Right. But if folks think I'm not doing a good job, they can fire me. They can vote me out. and elect someone else they think would do a better job. And so that's the basics of how our system works. And that's how I approach that system as I see it. It's not perfect, obviously. And there's a big debate about whether or not I'm simply to be a voice for my constituents, or I am supposed to be a custodian or of our system and sort of making the best decisions for them or on their behalf. And so, votes come down in different ways, but I try to do my best to represent my constituents' views, but also preserve the Constitution and preserve our system of government and make the best choice given the range of options I'm given, right? Most of the time in life, you're not given an infinite array of choices, right? You're given a menu of choices, and you don't have a big menu. This may be three items. You can do X, Y, or Z. And two of those choices are awful, and one is something you just don't like.
Yes. It's not like the Cheesecake Factory where it's like 20 pages of confusing menu. Yes.
It's the exact opposite of that.
Yes.
It's like the first one. The first one is like, I'm going to come and burn down your house.
Yes.
Right.
Like, I don't think I like that one. Well, the other two are worse. Right? You're like, well, I think I'll take the one that's the least bad. Right. So there's a lot of that in Washington. Or you try to support something because the next thing that happens, it could be much worse. So there's a lot of trade-offs in this. And I try to be honest and straightforward that, I did this because the other alternatives were this. And I thought that was the best thing we could do. Not that I perfectly liked the outcome, right, but because the alternatives were worse.
Yeah.
And that's frankly just, so much what we have to do in life or make some of those, try to be thoughtful about it, but make some trade-offs.
Yes.
Right. And riders is one of the biggest things that I ever, when you find out, okay, this bill got denied. Yeah. But did you see the rider that got attached to the bottom?
That
never gets the big play, that it's the big name that gets, but then there was something slipped in on the bottom that somebody caught and said, yeah, we really can't do this in good conscience. Can we take this piece off? No. Okay, then the whole thing can't go.
Yeah.
Right.
So,
and yes. And that's one of the big frustrations is you have a 1,000-page bill.
Yeah.
And you're like, well, I voted for a 1,000-page bill. Oh, okay. Why did you vote for it? So, well, because I voted for, these 950 pages were fantastic. And these 50 pages were atrociously horrible and awful.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so you do a town hall meeting and you walk in and everyone wants to talk about three pages of legislative text out of a 1,000-page bill. Yes. Right. But other times you get a bill and it's 1,000 pages long. And those three pages are so bad that you can't support the bill.
Mm-hmm.
So and it's all a matter of perspective on this. And frankly, reasonable people can come to, different conclusions here. So much of the political debate is, a big yes or no, right? Do you like higher taxes or lower taxes? Well,
right.
Most of the time we don't have dramatic choices like that.
Right.
Of one is like you're driving north or you're driving south, right? Most of the time, it's not that simple. It's a question of trade-offs and sort of, a question of not fundamentals, but of taste, if that makes sense.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Right. That's a bit of the challenge of public policy and politics.
Well, thank you. That question was posed by Mackenzie Fallon. She's a senior here in Mr. Beverly's AP Civics class. And we're going to get through as many as we can. We've got four more. The second one, and this kind of, I think, speaks to how not just teenagers, but I would say probably most Americans now get their news probably via social media. And this question deals with political polarization. It says, how can Americans and politicians from both parties come together and compromise to end this polarization that seems to be growing in our country?
This is a very tough question. Mm-hmm. It's tough. I think the missing ingredient here is listening. And I talk a lot, but you gotta listen to hear. And what we've tried, what we are doing now and through social media is getting in our channel of information, our float of information that's most comfortable to us. And then we marinate in that. So I don't want to hear opinions that disagree with me. And so I'm going to have all these things that I feel comfortable with. And that's going to be what I look at it on Twitter. And you fail to recognize that other people see things differently. So the ingredient we need now is to actually follow the people that we disagree with. Hear their feedback, hear what they're saying. Talk to people that you disagree with and see if there's some linkage there where you can agree on some basis of fact. And so we have to be able to have that discourse in order to have some compromise. And we have to have that discourse so that we can have a civil society. And what I mean about civil society is it's fine if somebody else is making the decision, you have no part of it. You don't need to be informed. That's fine. But if we're going to elect people in our system of government, you better be informed. Otherwise, we're going to get a pretty horrible government as a result of that, whether it's city, county, state, or national. You've got to have an informed electorate about what's happening in order to have good elected officials, and you got to hold them accountable. But the big part is listening to people you disagree with and seeing if there's some linkage. The final thing is this: facts matter. And there are facts, not debatable opinions, but facts, right? I don't like gravity, but gravity works on me and works on you, and it works on everyone in a similar way. And I can rage against gravity all I want and say that, you know, I don't like it, but that doesn't mean it's not a fact, an operational fact. Right. We've got a lot of people that are saying, no, that's not a fact. You're like, no. They're basic facts and principles. You can say that fact is not as important as another fact, and therefore you have a difference of opinion about this, right? Mm-hmm. But you cannot dismiss truths because you don't like hearing them. And so I think that needs to be sort of a baseline of our discourse as well.
And unfortunately, a lot of our information that comes from social media, you know, it's fed by those algorithms on YouTube and Facebook, so they're bombarded with one side, mm-hmm. Not the other side. Or if it is the other side, it's the most ugly part of the other side. And it just feeds into the you feeling the same way, only more strongly, and causes the division to be greater. That was a well-worded answer. Listening is key, and I think I'm glad to hear you point that out. And I think that's something that, you know, because he mentioned political parties and our politicians and just everyday Americans, you know, listen to each other. That you might disagree with them, but they're not your enemy. They're Americans.
Every now and again, step
right,
out of the echo
exactly.
chamber.
And that's right. Everybody wants to be in the echo chamber of what they feel comfortable with, and mm-hmm. and frankly, that's not how life works. Most common set of questions I get among high school students and middle school students is about abortion. And are you pro-life or pro-choice? However you want to word it, right? Well, we don't have those debates every day in Congress. In fact, every 2 years, we probably have 2 to 5 votes out of roughly 700 to 1,000 votes I cast over 2 years. We have fewer than 5 votes on that issue. But it is such a hot button polarizing issue in America but it's not something we work on every day. So frankly, you know, I can have a lot of agreement with people. I can agree with people on, out of those 1,000 votes over 2 years, we may vote the same on, you know, 95% of them. But why should I make you my enemy because we vote differently on 50 out of 1,000?
Right.
Right. And yet so many of the campaigns and so much of our political discourse deals with, you know, 5 of those 50 votes where there's some disagreement. And so, you know, it's kind of, you know, it's, you know, we got to go make an active choice to go work with people that we disagree with. And it's not easy. It's not comfortable. But that's where the good comes. And that's where the real productivity comes, is trying to figure those things out where we can work together.
Okay. And that question was from Quintus Mitchell, another senior here at Ashbrook. The next question, what are the steps you took to become a representative in the 10th district, and how long did it take to reach this position?
Well, I mean, when I was in 11th grade American history, 10th and 11th grade, that's where I was really interested for the first time in political campaigns and everything else. And so I started volunteering on campaigns, a campaign when I was a senior in high school. And then I got very involved when I was in college. I was active in college Republicans as a Republican. I got involved in college Republicans. There's a college Democrats, and I'd encourage you to participate if you're a Democrat, in college Democrats. Or college Republicans if you're a Republican. And then I interned on Capitol Hill. So by the time I got to, you know, a couple of years into college, or, you know, a year into college, I knew that I wanted to be involved, you know, much more deeply. And actually, I interned in the congressional office, the actual physical office in the Capitol. I interned in that office, and then 10 years later, I was elected to Congress. And 10 years after that, I was actually occupying that very office where I interned, the actual That's physical neat. Space.
Wow.
So after I graduated from college, I started working, and I worked worked for a firm that did political work, and then got hired on a presidential campaign of George W. Bush for president. And so I worked on the Bush campaign, then worked in the Bush administration. I came home and I got elected to the state house. And then 2 years after getting elected to the state house as the youngest member of the state house, I ran and got elected to U.S. Senate. So that was kind of, you know, kind of interesting to
wow.
move it that quickly. I won the runoff to get the Republican nomination. I won that by 85 votes out of 30,000 that were cast.
Every vote counts.
yep. I knocked on doors, talked to a lot of people, and had a great campaign team that helped me get elected. So, I turned 29 the week before the election for Congress.
Wow, so you've been doing it quite a while then. Oh my goodness.
Yeah, don't let the gray hair fool you. I mean, you know, but yeah, I've been at it for a while. That's true.
And that question, thank you very much. And that question was from Rachel Lowry, another senior here at Ashbrook. So this next one, similar type question, but since you've been a member of the House for a decent amount of time, do you have any plans to run for another office? And if you do, what steps would you take? And if not, why would you choose not to?
Well, I don't have any interest in running for any other office. I am in my 9th term. This is year 17 in my service in Congress. How I focus on public service is I want to be in a position to get my policy and my ideas enacted into law, right? I'm a lawmaker. So I am focused on making laws, altering, changing, and making laws. And that is what I'm focused on. Other members of Congress may get elected and they want it as a platform. to go have opinions. I'm a lawmaker because that's how the Constitution, the Founding Fathers intended it, that you go craft legislation. That's that legislation has an impact and effect. That's why I'm there. That's why I got elected, ran for Congress. That's what I've been focused on. And I am accruing power in order to get that agenda and my ideas enacted. So being the lead on a committee, which is where I serve, having served in House Republican leadership, those are tools and mechanisms to enact that policy set that I care about. And so this might be too long of an answer, but I think as a chair of a committee in the House of Representatives, I can have for 6 years, I can have as big an impact as if I were a U.S. Senator. So I don't need to run for the U.S. Senate to have the power set that I've accrued over my 17 years. And in fact, if I went over to the U.S. Senate, I would lose a lot of that basis and I'd have to rebuild it. Mm-hmm. And so I am interested in getting policy enacted. I think I've got a perch to do that. If I were to run for U.S. Senate, I would do things dramatically differently. I would be, instead of spending time in the counties that I get to represent, you travel 100 counties in North Carolina. You spend somewhere around 80% of your time would be spent on raising money. So I'm spending that time on policy making rather than trying to put a massive amount of money in the kitty to go run for Senate.
Yeah, that great answer. Yeah. That question was posed by Emily Ramirez, a junior here at Ashbrook. Now, this is the last of the questions, and it is the only one that's very specific toward certain policies. And, you know, you talked about hot-button topics a while ago and how those are the ones that get a lot of airplay. And this one deals with gun control. And the question is, with your vote against H.R. 8, the Universal Background Checks Act, and H.R. 1446, Enhanced Background Checks Act, last Thursday, how would you say is a better way to protect schools against future shootings? And I guess this even comes in more to play. Tripp was pointing out before we started recording about what went on in Colorado, you know, within the last week. So the question is, how would you say is a better way to protect schools against future shootings, but I guess future shootings in general?
Well, I mean, these are horrible, violent acts that we just cannot condone. We cannot tolerate them in our communities, that's for sure. We have to first acknowledge that there are laws on the books that would prevent these events from happening and from these individuals getting the weapons that they used to commit those violent, horrible acts. And I voted against that bill or those bills because it would have had little or no bearing on any of the previous examples of mass shootings in our country. Those wishing to commit a heinous crime don't follow the law and or those procedures. And, you know, we already have background checks. There's also a mandatory waiting period to buy firearms. And those things are already in place. And so just making those harsher doesn't actually stop the nature of these crimes and these violent acts. And so, that's been my approach. So last Congress, I was a co-sponsor of a bipartisan bill that was called the Threat Assessment Prevention and Safety Act. And there are 182 of us that were co-sponsors. It was split between Democrats and Republicans. And this bill would have created a national strategy to identify and mitigate and targeted violence. And the way we do that is through a behavioral threat assessment and management. These are techniques that law enforcement uses, but we're going to enhance their capacity to do it and broaden their capacity and broaden the exchange of information between law enforcement agencies. Big part of this is resources and training and capacity, meaning money and technology to do that. These last two examples of shootings These individuals were on the FBI watch list and were being, but they were not followed closely enough or followed up closely enough. And what this bill that I supported last Congress would have done, and my hope is that we can do this, is focus on those techniques and enhance their ability, enhance the budget and technology capacity so that we can stop this before it actually happens. It's not for lack of concern about violence, but that I didn't vote for those bills. It was because it's a talking point rather than a reality of differential. And I think we have to focus on mental health much more holistically as a society. And mental health is we have an inadequate mental health system in our country, and we've got to do much, much better so that we can catch these things, catch problems before they become, the result of violence or bad outcomes for the individual or for the community.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. That last question was posed by Diana Gordon, a junior here at Ashbrook. And I think it's interesting that it's going to be interesting for them to be able to hear the answer to a specific policy question from someone who is in Congress, because it's not from Facebook or it's not from YouTube. It's something that I think it was very well explained. You do have tough decisions to make, and when you make decisions, it's sometimes, when we make decisions as regular citizens, we affect a much smaller group of people. And I know when you guys make decisions, sometimes it can affect a lot more people, and so it's, I know you feel that weight, and, it's something that I would never want to do.
No.
Definitely.
Definitely not. I'm good.
Well, we appreciate you. We appreciate the work you do. We appreciate your connection to Ashbrook High School. And we definitely want to thank you for spending the time with us today. And if you would please pass on our thanks to your press secretary who set this stuff up for us. And I enjoyed corresponding with her. And
thank you for carving out some time Tell the little one, thank you for the patience. I've got three at the house, I know, and we really appreciate you taking the time away.
Was there anything else you want to share?
Yeah, you can hear.
Yeah, we've heard her. She's great.
But she's great. We've both got kids. It's not a problem at all.
We both got little ones in the house.
Well, not to mention the 1,200 around here.
we have a small house, and my wife's Zooming or doing a Teams meeting at the same time, and I got a kid in virtual school and another who is, just kind of, out and about.
Right.
So,
trying to find somebody who will
somebody hang
question.
With me.
That's right. Right. But no, it's good to be with you guys, and thanks for the opportunity. This has been fun, and thanks for what y'all do to keep the Green Wave alive and rolling. So thank y'all.
All right. Thank you. Well, listen, we're going to let you sign off while we'll sign off here, but we totally appreciate your time. And is there anything else you want to share with the people of Ashbrook?
No, if anybody's interested in getting involved with my office, whether interning or learning more about how to get involved, Republican or Democrat, that's not the point. The point is involvement. We're happy to, please call my office. How to get us, but my website is mchenry.house.gov. I'm on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, the whole deal. So let us know your thoughts and give us some feedback. So thank you all for the time, and great to be with y'all. Take care.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye. Well, that was interesting.
Very much so.
Yeah. I learned a lot.
Yeah, same. Absolutely. Very, very cool to, and for him to be so open and just willing to talk to us.
All right. Well, we are going to be back with you in a couple weeks. Well, actually, next week we'll be recording our next episode with Coach James about Ashbrook football. But it was good to get back to an Ashbrook story where we learned something about an alum of Ashbrook and one that is doing big things in the government. And we do want to once again thank Patrick McHenry from the class of 1994 for joining us. And I'm Andrew Collins.
I'm still Trip Griffin.
We thank you for listening.
Thanks.
Ashbrook Soundwaves is a product of the Gaston County Schools Delta Fellows Program. All events described and opinions expressed in this podcast are based on our recollections and those of our guests, none of which are representative of Ashbrook High School or Gaston County Schools. All music used in this podcast is performed by Ashbrook's very own Caleb Davis and is used with his permission. Ashbrook High School is located in Gastonia, North Carolina.